Well, Australia has called on all parties in Sri Lanka to act in full accordance with the constitution, to respect the independence of institutions and follow due process. A foreign affairs spokesman noted in a statement that Sri Lanka's domestic crisis also has geopolitical implications. The island state is a battleground for influence between India and the West on the one hand and China on the other. But do we know technically who is Sri Lanka's Prime Minister at this stage? I asked Mario Arulthas, who is Advocacy Director at the US-based Tamil advocacy group Pearl Action.
I mean, I think it's a difficult question to answer at the moment. There are two claimants to it. In practice, what it looks like is that Rajapaksa wields the power. The military met with him, the police forces met with him, and he seems to be able to do things that Ranil Wickremesinghe is not able to do. So even when it comes to control of state media, it's Rajapaksa's party that has the control of those things. From a practical standpoint, it looks like Rajapaksa is in effect the prime minister.
In effect, but that's not constitutional, is it? Is this a coup?
No, it's not constitutional as far as I know. And this does bear all the hallmarks of the coup. Although the president, of course, claims that this was done according to the constitution.
Why has this come about now? Because the current president, who has thrown this up in the air, was on the side of the elected prime minister. What broke down?
In 2015, this current president was actually on the party of Mr. Rajapaksa, and he betrayed Rajapaksa to join Mr. Wickremesinghe and to run for elections, and that's how he became president in the first place. So they worked in a unity government that they called a coalition, which was made up of half of Rajapaksa's party, led by President Sirisena, and the UMP, which is Ranil Wickremesinghe's party. The other half stayed with Mahinda's party, and they were in effect the opposition. They called it the joint opposition. But over the past 3 years, the coalition that was leading the government actually faced, you know, a lot of tensions within. The progress that was expected by the government on things in the south was mainly about economics, about tackling corruption, tackling graft. There wasn't really enough progress on that side for people in the south. And if you look at people in the northeast, the Tamil population, and also many governments in the West, there was a specific emphasis on making progress on transitional justice issues, which this government also hasn't done sufficiently. This government has actually been postponing elections, local elections that were supposed to have happened over the next few months. This may have seemed like it came out of nowhere, but I think this must have been something that was in planning for a few weeks now.
Now, there is a geopolitical context here too, isn't there? The alignment of Sri Lanka is in play, if you like, between the West, I guess represented by India, and China on the other hand. How has that played into this?
Yeah, I think China has taken advantage of this situation, and they were the first to congratulate Rajapaksa for taking the position now, whereas the Western countries and India have largely been critical and calling for parliament to resume business. The previous government under Rajapaksa, when he was president between 2005 and 2000, particularly after the war in 2009 until 2015, he took on a lot of Chinese projects and a lot of Chinese debt, which further destabilized the Sri Lankan economy. They're very much dependent on China now, and the Chinese debts have been pretty enormous for Sri Lanka and the interest that they have to pay on them. The coalition government that was in power was trying to mitigate that somewhat, and the West and India were supportive of that, but they still weren't really able to release themselves off the grip of China. The Chinese have taken advantage of the situation and are making full use of it.
And what does this mean for Sri Lankans, both Sinhala and Tamil? You mentioned the issues that had not been resolved sufficiently for either sets of communities. But Rajapaksa as a president was a hardline character. A lot of terrible things happened under his rule. What comes next if he remains prime minister?
I think this is the fear that's shared by many Tamils, especially in the northeast of the island, where Rajapaksa's previous rule was one. I mean, of course, during the war, Tamils will say that he committed genocide, mass atrocities occurred, war crimes, crimes against humanity, for which, you know, this was taken up at the Human Rights Council in Geneva.
And sorry, just to interrupt briefly, to be fair, I guess accusations of a similar ilk were made against Tamils as well during that war.
Of course, not on the scale of the state, of course, but we're here speaking about a state that was systematically shelling civilians, executing those it had captured, and just committing crimes on a horrible basis. But even after the defeat of the Tamil Tigers in 2009, the Rajapaksa government continued to abduct and kill thousands of Tamils. This is not something that stopped when the new government came into power in 2015. Even now, the militarization in the Northeast, it's one of the most militarized regions in the world. The surveillance by the military continued and the collection of data continued to this day. So now that Rajapaksa is back as prime minister, there's a serious fear amongst Tamils that this information that has been gathered over the past 3 years could now be used for a renewed crackdown.
Mario Arulfas.